After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
Hi, this is Mind Rolling Podcast, and I'm Raghu Marcus.
And I'm David Silver, along with Raghu.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
It's freezing cold, horrible, Dave.
But for me, it's quite beautiful because I'm looking at the River Hudson, and there are these gigantic icebergs. Fortunately, I'm inside. But nature is truly resplendent in these very difficult times of the winter. I love it, though. I love it.
Okay, Mr. British.
No, I'm a whole person. That's why I love it. I don't just exist for summer climes and Hawaii and Southern California.
Okay, leave me alone.
I'm sorry. I'm starting off on a sarcastic note. Not a good thing.
I'm from Montreal. This is just bringing me back to my misspent and frozen youth, so I'm not so happy. Hey, listen.
Yeah.
So there's some people who have mentioned to us, you know, because we're getting lots of nice mail and great interaction with people. And in one instance, it was about, you know, the guests that we have on. God, they're all low-hanging kind of fruit. They're all people you know, friends and so on. You know, why don't you reach for something that's got a little bit more range to it, shall we say? Something like that, he said.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that letter.
Yeah.
And he was just implying that we only have our friends on here. And some of the people we have on are our friends, not all of them. But they're not low-hanging fruit, Raghu, by any stretch of the imagination.
<Not. are they? laughs>
No. I mean, you know, they're very distinguished people who've got a sense of humor also. Hard to find.
Yeah. And that's probably what you just said is really the essence, you know. When there's you're comfortable and when there's familiarity and when there's, you know, pre-knowledge that, as you say, the person has a great sense of humor. That's all we're about. Got to have a good sense of humor. It's, you know, walking around and suffering out here in this cold. I have to.
Back to the cold.
But, you know, I want to address that because we're going to be redundant with some of this stuff. But, you know, I don't think that that's bad. And, you know, even though I sound pretty defensive about it, I, as you all know, also do another podcast, Ram Dass Here and Now. And I just pick talks of his and so on, and I introduce them and tell a little bit of my own thing about it. And so, in fact, I wanted to mention something about David. This leads me to say something about you. Uh-huh. David just finished Naropa Institute, which was started in 1974, by Trungpa Rinpoche, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. They are having their 40th convocation. You know, it's an anniversary, you know, a convocation, and they're going to celebrate the 40 years in the beginning. And they asked Ram Dass to do something, just reflections. And David and Ram Dass did the Ram Dass, which David ended up putting together, did this wonderful, it's like a 20-minute little film almost, Dave. It's a great little doc. Anyhow, because it tells a story. And that story from back then was really some of the most incredible talks that he ever gave, Ram Dass. Anyhow, in the midst of it, so we talk about redundant, low-hanging fruit, okay, is our relationship with Ram Dass, especially mine. Well, both of us, because that's all, you know, I mean, you know, it's our life and what we do, you know, all this kind of stuff. I'm going to read to you one thing that from that particular lecture, which leads me to say this is why he's able to put shit in words that so many of us can relate with. You become the environment in which the optimum growth is available to all human beings you come in contact with. So you got to become that environment, because you are no longer laying trips on anyone, not judging or discriminating individual differences. So this talk was about individual differences. And you know, this is just such a place to aspire to be, right? Become the environment in which the optimum growth is available to all human beings. So what a succinct way to just, you know, say that. So that's why, that's the low-hanging fruit. I just had to say that. We weren't even going to talk about this.
No, what I wanted to say about the low-hanging fruit thing, and I really respect the person who wrote to us, sort of slightly complaining about the sort of caress of people we have on. Very early on in this venture, when actually Raghu was thinking about it, I asked him what would be the sort of watchword for this. It wasn't going to be strictly spiritual. It wasn't going to be, you know, whatever. And he said, you said, Raghu, direct experience. In other words, we try and stick to stuff we've experienced or that we know people who have experienced who we trust. And that's what keeps it from being sort of theoretical or even bombastic, hopefully, and certainly not, you know, based upon dreams and fantasies, but based upon things that both of us have experienced quite a lot in our lives. So I was going to say that that sort of motto, which you came up with, Raghu, makes it only possible for us to, on the whole, be with people that we have some connection with. Obviously, that isn't the case all the time, and it shouldn't be.
No, and we talked to plenty of people
we didn't know Dennis McKenna, you know. Yeah. We didn't know Dennis. People like that who we talked to. But anyway,
what is our motto, by the way?
Well, you know, anecdotes and intuitions from direct experience, no lies, no cliches. You know, just like what happened to us.
Heard this motto before. Did you just make this up? I never heard this.
No. It was very smart of you, because very...
Me?
Yeah, you. You said to me, because I said, how do we differentiate this from things that I wouldn't listen to? I think that was the question. You know, lots of wonderful yogic and spiritual podcasts, but I probably would never listen to them. And you said, well, we're not going to cover anything that we didn't experience. We will investigate stuff, but we've got to have known this. You knew Maharaji and the incredible, incredible world around that, and since then. And I've known some other things. And you know, we try and stick to that. So the low-hanging fruit, to get back to that, of the people we have on the show, is there for a reason. So we're kind of talking in a verifiable, personally verifiable way. Yeah, if Russell Brand wanted to do this, or Bill Maher or something, we'd do it in a snap. But, you know, we're using people that we know have got things to say that might actually, you know, kind of ameliorate one's life in a certain kind of way if one is listening, you know, to the podcast. Anyway, that's enough of that.
Well, it sounds like a commercial. And so you might as well segue right into how can you support this wonderful thing that we seem to have come up with?
Well,
mind rolling.
Yeah, you can support it in a few ways. One is by buying everything through at Amazon.
Yeah, that's what we really got to encourage.
Yeah.
Because we're being told that seems to be the primary way that podcasters earn a living is through the affiliate program with Amazon and Audible. And they certainly, and through people's support, direct support and merchandise. But
the way to do it is to
bookmark,
go to the website and go to the Amazon portal and then bookmark that. And then you can immediately go to that instead of having to go through Amazon or whatever. Just go to that and whatever you buy that you need, do it through that, and it helps us. And they do send us the money. I mean, they're very, you know, it all works out very honorably, but it's a, sort of the same amount every month, and we could use with a bit of an up on that. And I know people have commented to me about, you know, all of this begging, but we've also been told that you have to do it, or people, you know, naturally won't think, you know, they just think
it's
we're
called
cool.
Commercials, right?
Yeah, I mean, right, commercials. That's the word.
That's what it's called. And by the way, Ram Dass's, since we're into advertising, and, you know, Ram Dass's new book is coming out, which is an old book, which is from the mid 70s, right around this period I was talking about. It's called Grist for the Mill. So it is a fantastic book that we managed to get republished with Harper, a big publisher, Harper One. And we are going to see that. It's going to come on February 12th. So go in there and buy that book with our mind rolling thing. Wouldn't that be great, Dave?
Yeah, it's appropriate. And that's all the begging we're going to do, at least for another half hour. So, so Raga, you've got...
Okay, yeah, I got something. I just saw something, and yeah. I just thought it was worth talking about. I mean, I don't... It's around the blame game. It's around blame. And I don't think there's one soul on the planet that has not engaged in that game. It's very, very difficult, especially if you have any kind of relationship with anybody that, you know, from marriages to friendships or whatever, these things can come up. So this article quotes the Chinese mystic Huang Zu more than 300 years ago. And he said, it's a parable. Imagine you are in a rowboat on a lake. It's beautiful, calm day. And you're enjoying the peacefulness of the moment. But then you notice there's another boat heading straight towards you. You shout, look out, and wave your arms. But the boat keeps coming. You try to steer out of the way, but it's too late. You keep shouting, but the boat keeps coming. It rams into you, knocking you into the water. You are cold, wet, and your beautiful day, your serenity, is ruined. What are you doing? You yell at the driver of the other boat. Why don't you watch where you're going? Then you look into the other boat. It's empty. It is, I mean, if that isn't the perfect parable for what this insidious thing that we do to ourselves, and we do it to ourselves too, not just you know, it doesn't need to be directed at anybody else. I have to say, you know, that in all these years, it is such a transparent thought, emotion, you know, blame. And all these years and all this spiritual work, I find myself, you know, thank God for a little bit of mindfulness, aware of it in sometimes the smallest insignificant situations. Like, and blame usually leads, you know, it incorporates anger, which I know you have something about as well. But, yeah, I mean, not just 2 hours ago, something, you know, couldn't get, technically something wasn't going right when I was trying to do something at the computer. And I saw myself, because I had read this article, going, okay, what is wrong with these people that they can't make this more transparent so that I'm not, you know, getting lost, not being able to do what I want to do? You know, I'm my mind, it went out to the technicians at Apple, right? It's supposed to be everything, you know, it's way easier than anyhow, I went off on it, right, and completely got lost. And so when I read this parable, I thought, it truly points out the absolute emptiness, you know, that is in all of this phenomena that we are reacting to and just looking for, you know, a way out of responsibility, which is what she talks about a little bit later.
Yeah, the article, by the way, is called Empty Graves and Empty Boats. It's by Rachel Newman, or Neumann. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it. It's in Shambhala Sun, the March 2014 edition of that great magazine. Anger and blame are very much part of this. And the thing that I've found in the last few years or whatever is that when I find myself sort of reflexively doing this, I don't like the sound of my voice anymore. I can tell immediately this is going nowhere and I got to stop. Mm. Whereas, you know, years ago, I just let it rock, you know. But, you know, particularly driving, you know, I've been with the most wonderful, particularly in Western Mass, won't mention, wonderfully spiritual human being who is just so peaceful all the time and loves everybody and would not kill a tick on the back of her dog. But driving suddenly, how could you fucking do that? I mean, you know, you're an asshole. I fucking hate you. So, it's sort of like, okay, that's an instance where we catch ourselves, and we've all been there. Not all.
That's gone beyond catching anything.
Yeah, right. But I mean, it happens all the time. You're with people who are very civilized and lovely and spiritual and deep and compassionate and empathic. And then something will trigger something. So you have to wonder, well, they're not complete. They're not saints yet, but that's okay. The thing about what she says, though, Raghu, in this is that, you know, gratitude in her could turn to resentment so quickly that she could just go down a line. I'm being very honest about it, Rachel. And it would lead her to blame after blame after blame, blame the government. Like, it's really easy to watch TV and go, I can't believe those creeps. I just can't believe them. If they would just relent on one little thing, da 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 da, and it's very easy to fall in that. And she says in the article, Raghu, at one point, she says, "But what do you do about really bad things?" That's her quote. Like, for instance, the Holocaust. Are we allowed to blame the Sturmfuhrers, the Fuhrer himself, the Gestapo, the SS, the commandants of the guards at Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen, Buchenwald? What do we do with that? What do we do with that particular, and let's use that as a symbol, the hugest imaginable symbol of something to actually feel you can blame those Germans and pull it all the way down to blaming, you know, Apple for not, you know, for doing something weird, which they do occasionally, and it makes you irritated that a Mac computer doesn't or does do something. How does she answer it, by the way, really?
Well, she says that the anecdotes are, as you mentioned before, gratitude and co-responsibility, right? So you immediately stop looking outwards. You at least are looking in two places at once, right? You're looking inside, and you're seeing just, you know, how you're caught. And, you know, the most transparent examples have got to be really the reactivity that we all have towards everything we see going on, the inequality and social injustice going on in the world, and how we immediately do knee-jerk react, go, okay, who do we blame for that? You know, John Boehner, you know, we blame him because he's not letting, you know, and the Republicans, because they're not allowing Obama to pass, an extension on unemployment, right, which is killing millions of people. Okay, they stopped the unemployment payments to I don't know how many million people.
1.7 million.
1.7 million. So can you imagine suddenly 1.7 million people cannot, find a way to feed their families and keep a roof over?
It's hard not to blame them, but you see where the spiral comes here. Those right-wingers blame the poor. That's what they're doing. They're blaming the poor,
right,
and the entitlements to the poor that is discombobulating the economy, and therefore we shouldn't even restore the old food stamp situation or whatever, because they're blaming the poor for being poor. And, you know, if someone wants to write to me about this, they can. But I've been around politics a long time, and, you know, really, I see all this blame going on all the time. They blame the poor blame the rich, whatever. It's just not working. So blame, which is the theme that you suggested, Raghu, for this podcast, is a very central part of the sort of dis-ease of our social systems and of our personal interactions. Mm-hmm. You know, as soon as you start blaming your partner, that's the road to, you know, not really embracing the love between you. It's sort of saying, you know, I can't love you when you do this, which is no good, because love is unconditional. So at a very micro level, you know, we blame the people around us sometimes. But on the macro level, it's going on a huge political, ideological, you know, obnoxious process, which is saying, you know, these loafers at the bottom, these welfare freaks, these people who have children just to get, you know, Medicaid or something, they're the ones that, and they're doing it, and it's extremely annoying to those of us that know many, many, many people who are having real hard times, you know, with money and with paying the rent and everything, the mortgage, who are perfectly, absolutely not that. That they're doing. So that's hard not to blame. Now, what do we do? What do I do with this? Do I not blame these right-wingers in the Republican Party now and say, it's okay? No. You fight the fight without hate. You look at a picture of Hanuman frequently smiling, but Hanuman is flying to erase and eradicate the demons in the Ramayana, but he's smiling and he's peaceful. So you fight without hate. You still got to fight this or else everything. 85 people now own are as wealthy as 3.5 billion people on the planet, half the population of the planet. So how is it, you know, what do we do with that? And I'm tossing it back to you because, you know, what do you think?
Well, you know, here's another level. She says, blaming is neither true nor not true. It doesn't take me even one tiny step closer to my or anyone else's happiness or freedom. So on one level, she's saying what you just said and what we're saying. It absolutely accomplishes nothing. You know, projecting this stuff, which is really a combination of, you know, that includes, I think that the force of the arrow of blame is anger. So it includes a healthy dose of that. But at the same time, I think what's being said or what can be suggested is that blame is neither true or not true. So it's not true that whoever is taking certain actions to create a result that they are committed to, then should there be suffering as a result of that, then of course there is blame on that person, to go to that person. And I think it really... I think it is exactly what you suggested, whereas you do what you do to say, no, this can't go on. And I think it turns then from blame to a justified kind of anger that's without hatred.
Right.
I think that you got to operate multi-levels of consciousness around this. It's not just black and white. You know?
Right, right. I mean, anger...
It's again, where you're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just to get back to Ram Dass for a moment, I remember 35 years ago having some kind of conversation with him about how, you know, he agreed with much of the anger of the political resistance and progressive left, but he just got turned off when he saw that resistance being expressed in extremely hateful terms. And that is still, you know, when I look at Facebook, and my friend group is a pretty sweet group, really. They're not, you know, they're not exactly bomb throwers. But every so often, I mean, every day on Facebook, I see a really angry reaction to some political thing, usually, or environmental thing, or to do with animal, you know, animal welfare. Yeah. And they're always right. Talking about Fukushima, they talk about torturing elephants. There's no argument about the righteousness of their protest, but then they add words to it like, you know, I hope this person, you know, really has a car crash or something, and you know, and it can't be like that. You know, as soon as you do that, then the arrow that you're firing from your bow is tipped with fire, right, instead of anything, right, healing. It doesn't have, you know, it's going to hurt.
And it doesn't have the effect that you would want it to have as well.
Right, 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 right. I mean, so the blame game, just like the anger syndrome, it seems, even on just a purely pragmatic level, is no good because the only person who ever gets hurt is yourself. And I know this to be true because if you have a big fight with your wife or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whatever, you know, even while you're fighting, oh, I'm going to feel really awful after this. And that's as good a thing as anything to know. Maybe for as long as hours and hours and hours, you just feel shattered and petrified that you've just yelled at someone who you actually love.
Yeah.
And that's proof to me that this is actually pragmatically an impractical way of distributing your feelings.
Yeah. You know, right? The anecdote, one of them is gratitude and co-responsibility. Co-responsibility, we talked. Gratitude is tricky, she said, because where there's any kind of obligation, right, in that gratitude, then it usually people get pissed and just get resentful of having to do whatever they, you know, agreed. So here's a great quote, though, from, it's a Pali teaching, and it's from the Katanu Sutta, which I never read this before, okay? I don't know what the Katanu Sutta is, just like, you know.
I warned you, listeners, this one's heavy.
If okay. Even if you were to carry your mother on one shoulder and your father on another shoulder for 100 years, and you were to look after them by anointing, massaging, bathing, and rubbing their limbs, and they were to defecate and urinate right there on your shoulders, you would not in that way pay or repay your parents. That's gratitude, folks, okay?
I mean, yes. You know, that image.
I mean, they just go all the way. You know, when they're trying to get something across to you, you know, the ancient Eastern traditions here. I don't know when the Pali, Katanu Sutta, the Pali teaching. So this no excuses, go ahead and be on my shoulder type of gratitude is so counterintuitive to my well-worn and boring rut of blaming that I've made a conscious decision to move toward it. Okay. This is, I mean, is there anything else to aspire as far as gratitude? And then you think that, you know, if you really have true gratitude, it's a whole other relationship with life at that point, you know, because I mean, the blaming thing goes on all the time, all day. If you really just start to think of it, right? Even just thinking out, just, you know, banging on a corner. You walk around the door hitch. I don't know. Nothing. Right. And you go, why did they do that? I mean, whoever built this house, you know, the carpenter, what's he doing? What's he thinking? It goes on day in and day out. It's, you know, part of the I, me, mine. So I just loved it.
Okay, well, you know, I have a crappy old toaster or whatever you call those things, and pretty much one morning out of three, it burns me. And so the first word, maybe I meditated, maybe I didn't. Early in the morning, I get up at 6:30, 7 o'clock, and I go in there, and I wanted the day to just be, you know, cool and dharmic. And I go to the toaster, and I put the thing in, and it's cool, but when I take it out, my wrist always hits upon the edge of it somehow and burns me. And the first words out of my mouth are usually something that I'm not even going to say because it's offensive to women. But, you know, that's my designation of this particular machine. Now, what does that prove? Because, you know, it proves that there's anger in me because I really should be able to go, oh, dear, I should get a new toaster. But I don't.
Geez. Oh, my. Oh, my, my.
I wanted to quote something that sort of ties in with this. And just bear with me. It's by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and it's on January 29th, the book that is the sort of, you know, daily diary, which is actually called The Path to Tranquility by the Dalai Lama. And today, which happens to be January 29th, I read it every morning. He says, it is said that if you want to know what you were doing in the past, look at your body now. If you want to know what will happen to you in the future, look at what your mind is doing now.
Well, that's pretty far out.
It's great because he's saying your body is formed by what your karma of your life, but your future is what you're building in your mind. In your mind, right. And in terms of blame, on a very small microscopic level, every time you build that blame in your mind, you are creating some kind of Newtonian karmic boomerang effect sometime somewhere in yourself, which will not be to your liking. And Dalai Lama, as usual, because he's such an amazing scholar but such an amazing distiller of like basic truths, I can't believe that just in that short sentence, what your body is what you've done to yourself so far, and your future is what you're thinking right now. So if you're thinking nasty, blameworthy things upon your wife or partner, but you don't tell her or him, and then they come in and you never mention it, It's not as bad as actually saying to her, you know, I'm really sick of the way you work in this house. You know, it's better than that, but it's still in your mind. As Jimmy Carter said, I still have lust in my heart. So
Jimmy Carter.
No, Jimmy Carter said that. And he was just being a true, you know, mystic Christian. That there's a thought. And that's the Dalai Lama says, the thought will create conditions for you and your consciousness in the future. Not to be, and you shouldn't blame yourself for that. Just be mindful of it and try and sort of go, okay, I'm a blamer. I'm blaming John Boehner. Oh, it rhymes. I'm a blamer. I'm blaming John Boehner.
Okay, that signals the end of that.
Yeah.
I do want to thank, we should say a word. We never, I mean, we read the Shambhala Sun. I have a subscription. I have two subscriptions, one to the Shambhala Sun and one to Rolling Stone. Okay. And that's where, you know, we get all our shtick from is, I mean, not Rolling Stone so much, but Shambhala Sun just has marvelous articles about stuff that, you know, I guess we're interested in terms of, okay, will it help us get a little further along the way and anybody else, you know, at the same time? So Shambhala Sun, we should have an affiliate thing with them, though, right?
We should. Well, we're such brilliant marketers, yeah. After all.
Okay, do you want to call? You call them up and ask them. You have an in there now, because Naropa and, you know, Shambhala Sun, it's all part of Trungpa's.
Well, we should take care of it, because this woman, Rachel Newman or Neumann, and I apologize, because we don't know whether it's Neumann or Newman. I think it's probably Newman. Does something in the article that Shambhala Sun does all the time. Take something that's sometimes a deep Pali or Buddhist or whatever, you know, thing, and puts it right down to today, now, what you're living, what happens to you when you get off the commuter train, etc. Yeah. And Shambhala Sun does that all the time. Very unpretentious wisdom. And, you know.
There you go. That's a commercial. See, and we're not getting any benefit from this at all. This is true.
You can get your subscription for Shambhala Sun on Amazon. So go to the Amazon portal. Yes, you can. I did it this morning. You can go to Amazon.
For God's sake, I didn't know that.
Shambhala has a deal with Amazon, which has a deal with someone else, who'll send you 6 issues for $19 or $20, which is a year.
Okay, then I really want to do a commercial. Folks, get out there and subscribe to Shambhala Sun, fantastic magazine. That's it. That was number two. We have two commercials going now. This is the best we ever did.
Masterful. Yeah.
Okay, what, you have something up?
No, I actually
don't. What do you
don't.
Mean, no?
Well, I did my thing. I talked about the Dalai Lama. I mean, you know, and we talked about, I did want to mention James Senegal, I think he's called. We put a thing on Facebook this morning and on Twitter about him. He's the CEO of Costco.
I didn't see this.
Yeah, I just did it.
Oh.
And basically, I've been an admirer of him for a long time, because Costco is a very successful, I don't have to tell you how successful Costco is, but he disagrees violently with all the things that are being said by other corporate heads. He's been paying a minimum wage of $17 an hour now for years. He gives all benefits.
$17 an hour is what you get at Costco?
That's what you get at Costco.
No.
And all benefits. And he refuses to take more than $500,000 a year in salary, which compared with other equivalent corporations where they usually get between $30 and $40 million a year salary, he takes $500,000, won't take a penny more, talks to his people all the time and gives them what they ask for in any reasonable way. And if you talk to Costco employees, you'll find that they really do feel invested in this company.
Jesus.
So I just wanted to, you know, do a shout out to him, not that maybe he's listening to this, but to anyone who was interested, that, you know, capitalism isn't inherently evil or anything. It's just that there has to be a balance. And this guy, James Senegal, I'm going to actually look up his name on Facebook right now, because I did it. You know, he's a grand guy, kind of. You know what I mean? Like, he's someone who has done something really, what can you say?
Where did you see that? Because I've never seen any
I've seen articles. I've seen articles about it. He's a big sponsor of Obama's, it so happens. And Obama frequently speaks of him as being an extremely good model. It's on Facebook under Mind Rolling, and other people have shared it. And his name is, I believe, James Senegal. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And what I say in the Facebook, Raghu, is not all capitalist and consumerist icons are callous. Let's love James Senegal because he's fought selfishness and we can get a gallon of Dijon mustard to boot. But he refuses to come under any pressure to reduce salaries or benefits for all of his employees. This is incredibly opposite to Walmart, which, as you know, pays everybody nothing with lousy
benefits. Okay, but what's the reality there? Because if they're paying that kind of wage, minimum wage, do you think that their products would be more expensive?
There are comments, and I think there's serious, reasonable commentary by the right, that he is incrementally making things more expensive so as to pay for this. But he believes that it's a creep. It's not a thing where, you know, suddenly something that costs $20 is $50. It's sort of like in 3 months, mm-hmm. it'll cost $22.50. And that, in fact, the consumer is paying for it.
But it's obviously a successful company, right?
Oh, madly successful, madly successful.
So something's right.
Yeah, I mean,
model-wise.
Yeah, and it's tempting to say that, you know, oh, well, he's only doing it because he's actually going to make more money. But I've seen him interviewed many times. And when you see him talk, you know he's not a bullshitter.
Really?
This guy's a sweetheart. And we're just very lucky that at least one place that a lot of people use has got a vision behind it. Because he says, if you talk to my employees, you can talk to any of them anytime, anywhere, they'll tell you the same thing. They have loyalty to the company and they enjoy working here.
Mm. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. It's pretty amazing, you know. Anyway, so... What is that it? No, I'm like lost. I don't have anything else except, I mean, I can talk about, you know, the Grammys.
No, but, no.
All right.
But wait, I do want you to talk about, you just told me you're going on the radio tonight. I do want to hear about that.
Oh, I'm going on, what is the station? It's called.
You mean we can get it here?
Yeah, you can get it. It's
oh, cool.
it's you just go to Styles STYLZ FM 96. Styles FM 96.
On what? On the internet, you mean?
On the internet, yeah. And it comes out of Port Antonio in
that's
Jamaica.
That's not radio, that's internet radio.
Yeah, well, excuse me. I'm not on NPR, you know. But anyway, they're interviewing me tonight about my relationship with Bob Marley because it's a reggae station. And let's see what happens. Anyway, Style FM 96.
Why don't
Style.
You put that out on a mind rolling on Facebook and Twitter? Give everyone a chance. Yeah, absolutely. That makes it easy to just then you got the link and it's all right there.
Okay.
Come
on. But what if I make a fool of myself? It's live.
Well, you do this every week on mind rolling, so it's not going to be a problem.
Did you hear that music then? Suddenly, Styles FM kicked in.
No.
if you heard a bit of music. Anyway, what we're going to talk about is the experiences I had with Bob Marley when I first met him, which were incredible and also very very frightening and terrifying, actually.
Life-threatening.
Life-threatening, exactly. So that's what they want to talk to me about, because there's been a lot of controversy in Jamaica about what actually happened to Bob, and I'll just add my 2 cents. Okay, so that's all I have to say.
And, that's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think we've reached our limit of time, but you would be a better judge than me on that matter. It sounds like I just want to get out of here. I don't want to sound
Do you have an appointment or anything?
No. I mean, no. Okay. I'm happy to just sit here with our listeners and vibe, you know. It's okay. If you're driving... you know, don't take us too seriously.
Oh, wait, I did want to say something,
okay,
though, before...
Okay,
yeah, we are
I'm waiting for you to say something.
Okay, well, it's just that it has to do... It's a little bit of a follow-up to our last podcast. Sorry. About loneliness. Loneliness is such a drag, right?
Right.
I like that. And I love that Hendrix song we played.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I want to read something. At one point in the podcast, you actually brought up that what we're talking about, there's two levels here. One is loneliness, and the other is aloneness. And you were talking about the efficacies of alone, and that had nothing to do with loneliness. And I think, and then I came back and said, well, you know, I came back to a, shall we say, more interpersonal level of it, having people that you can trust and so on to build, you know, this kind of a relationship in the world. So again, because we, you know, this is a lecture, a talk that Ram Dass gave at Naropa that we talked about earlier in the podcast. And this is something else from it. I was so struck. I was almost going to pull it and, you know, just cut it and we could, you know, put it in the, just play it in this podcast, but didn't have time. And okay. I'm going to read it.
Okay.
You will find in the spiritual journey that you'll come into intense experiences of aloneness. But if you examine them carefully, they are very different from loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
It ends up that we are all alone. We are all alone. And then begins very early in the game to be the flickering recognition of that aloneness. We are not alone, my friend. Not because there are so many others, but because there are none. It's another kind of aloneness, not loneliness. That's it's pretty poetic. You know, I was almost going, what did he quote this or something from somebody? I mean, it was really, you know.
No.
The flickering recognition.
Yeah, I never heard that.
That of that all aloneness, the flickering recognition, we are not alone, not because there are so many others, but because there are none. I love that.
Yeah, it's great.
It's another kind of aloneness, not loneliness. Anyhow, that's a deep thought from Mind Rolling Podcast to you. And I was going to end with another commercial, but you're frowning, maybe even.
No. Go ahead, please.
Because it's Audible. On audible.com, I'm going to end, because we're, you know, Ram Dass has been a big part of this podcast, or at least some quotes from him. I found incredible stuff from Ram Dass on Audible as I was perusing Audible myself the other day. Audible.com. You can look it up. It's his Here We All Are is one of them. It's his transformation story. Amazing. It's the talk that I heard the first time I heard Ram Dass that completely changed me up. So that's on Audible. And when you go and do a trial thing with audible.com, which you go to mindrollingpodcast.com to find that portal, and then you link and you get a free trial. We get a few dollars for each, I don't know, $10, $15, Dave, something like that.
Yeah.
For each a subscription, which you can, you know, get some books, but you don't have to keep it going. You can just try it. It's a free trial. So audible.com, and that makes three commercials in one podcast, which is a record for us, Dave.
Yeah, we stand some kind of chance now.
Yes. no, but we, you know, please, everybody, whatever you can do to support us, we sure do appreciate it. We appreciate the mail, and I appreciate you, Dave, for really keeping the site going and keeping the interest going and all of the social media. Join Facebook, and Dave sends out, we're going to do a book. We got to do a book of these incredible posts that Dave puts up, their quotes and pictures that are just fantastic. So I want to do that. We have all these ideas, and so help us help support what we're doing, folks. And yeah, we want to, we'll do a bunch more cool things in the future. So,
and I just want to add one thing. The gentleman who wrote about the low-hanging fruit that we obsessed about, we love you, and you wrote some really great things in that letter too, and was very complimentary, and but you know, very appropriately analytical, and we thank you for that. So please.
Oh,
don't.
You just gave us some great stuff to start talking about.
Yeah, you did. So thanks a lot.
You were part of it. That's all right. This is Mind Rolling Podcast, and we're going to see you in another week, and. All good things and warm things is what we're going to try and think of, Dave. And we'll speak to you again.
Stay safe.